The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by ZipRecruiter. Forgetting to start the hottest quarterback in the league, Josh Allen? Not smart. Using ZipRecruiter to find qualified candidates fast? That's smart. ZipRecruiter identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, then actively invites them to apply. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter.com/06010.
You're in the 06010.
Welcome in to the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. It's hump day of week 14. The playoffs are upon us. Field Yates here with Mike Clay sitting to my left. And Stefania Bell is back. Good morning, Stefania.
Good morning.
Refreshed. And man, I was thinking to myself earlier, and we talked about this yesterday on the show, like we've sort of dismissed some teams because you get to the playoffs and there's not nearly as much information to worry about with, like, you're probably not starting a Jet. You're probably not starting
a Raider.
One or two. Yeah.
Not maybe Jared Cook.
Jared Cook, right? There's a few teams that have been whittled away, that have just been, they're on vacation for fantasy football purposes. Mm-hmm. But we got a ton of news this week, a ton of news. So it's good to have Stefania back and good to have Stefania here with all the information because I know you've been gearing up over the past couple of days to get us ready for it. Matthew, of course, as we mentioned yesterday on the show, is coming back on Friday. So, Mike, you're riding with us for two straight days.
Yes. Yeah. We'll see if I could, if I have the endurance down the stretch here, 3 days a week. So, I think I got it.
Suggest coffee myself. You guys have a big pins. I was told there was a big pins above replacement match last night.
Yeah, indeed. Daniel, team captain?
It was. Oh, am I the team captain?
I think so.
Okay. It was apparently such a big one
that it
affected your ability to join us for the pre-show meeting.
Listen, I've been here for 30 seconds. Stefania's already throwing shade at me.
Well, yeah, because some of us have been here for, you know,
a lot longer.
So,
I understand.
I know.
Matthew's away for the day, and somebody has to adopt the Matthew role in some
right?
way, shape, or form.
Right.
It only makes sense the person who skips the Tuesday show is that person. You know what I'm saying?
Were you late because somehow...
Check out my NBA article.
I'm wondering...
If you're hinting that I wasn't busy.
No, my question is this. Were you late because your car was egged last night? And not egged like just by like a dozen regular eggs, like chicken eggs. Like Matthew would say he got egged and it was like an ostrich egg. Like there's an ostrich egg
sure.
that somehow emerged in Connecticut and that was what he had to clean off of his car. It caused him to show up 5 seconds before the show. Was that it?
No, that was not it.
Detoured? Was there like a detour?
No detour, no.
Did you injure a hamstring? That had to be recalled when you did pins above replacement.
I did not. No, my battery died. I left my lights on last night, so I just had to wait for...
You left your lights on.
I had to wait for my wife to get
home.
That
is not a pro move.
No, it's not super exciting. Also, Stefania, I don't appreciate it, and I've seen your fantasy baseball or basketball record, and I don't know if I'm going to read your article now.
On that note, time for some football.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
News or noise?
No noises!
Field, are you having issues? Are you okay over there?
My IFB, which for those who don't know is the earpiece that we wear that we're able to hear the sound, not only just our own voices, but also the sound from Daniel and Tarika, Keith and Kyle. I think there might be a split in the wire because it's not transmitting through my ear. It's instead, and Mike can hear it. It's emitting sound from like the top of this wire.
Somewhere out there.
You know,
yeah.
Like when kids used to put a string in a plastic cup together.
Right.
It sounds like my IFB is the technology version of a string in a cup.
Yeah, we're not the worldwide leader for nothing. We are bringing you the string in the plastic cup sound.
I have Matthew's IFB in my bag, which has also been through my dog's small intestines. If you want to use it.
You know something, Daniel?
I don't know which one you'd rather have.
Weirdly or not, I am going to choose to not wear Matthew's IFB.
That is strange.
Have you sound like this. I have Matthew's and small intestine dog.
That's what it sounds like.
My own IFB. So muffled
field.
And that's all right.
But he's a broadcasting professional.
We'll tough it out, right?
You can mouth breathe.
You can mouth breathe
that's
through
right.
there. You got it covered.
So let's begin with some news.
You said he can mouth breathe. I was like, Mike, that's not nice. You haven't
too.
Been here that
I can mouth breathe with the best of them. Stefania, we found out yesterday, right after the show went off the air, but you weren't here anyway, so it's a good opportunity to rehash this news as it is, that James Conner is out for week 14. Mike Tomlin, one of the more transparent coaches in the NFL with injuries and timetables, said that he's out for week 14. And they announced this on Tuesday at like noon, which tells you they have a pretty good feel for what this injury is.
Yes, and I think there, you know, some people were expressing frustration that Tomlin had said it was a contusion when he came out and he was adamant it was a contusion. Let me remind you, Mike Tomlin gets his information from the medical staff. So when he is talking about what the player has, he is relating what he has been told. And so then you might wonder, well, how does the medical staff not know exactly what's going on? Remember, on Monday, we said that James Conner was going for further evaluation because we really didn't know how extensive this contusion that they thought he had was. If you were watching the game, and I mentioned this on Monday, and I had a few people say it to me as well, if you know the mechanism of a high ankle sprain is usually that your foot gets rotated outwards and the rest of you is relatively rotating inward. That looked like what happened to James Conner's ankle as he was getting tackled. But we also know the video is not always 100% conclusive, which is why I personally stay away from speculating when I see it. And when the medical staff is evaluating the player on the sideline, they're not accessing the video at that moment necessarily. You know, they have access to the video. They can go back and look at it, which is really nice. And when I did that piece on the concussion protocol, I heard from a lot of folks that they actually really like to go back and look at it later because it can help explain nuances about the injury. They didn't see it. He didn't have pain in that area just at the roof of the ankle where typical high ankle sprains are. He had pain in the shin, sort of fit with what they thought was a contusion. He went on to have an MRI, and later they found, oh, yeah, he does have a high ankle sprain, or at least they're calling it a sprain. My assumption is that it's a high ankle sprain based on the mechanism that we saw. And I would also say, I assume it's a high ankle sprain because they're looking at his ankle and they're not finding any instability or anything of that nature, but they see something on imaging. That's usually reflective of a high ankle injury. And in fact, beyond the ligaments at the roof of the ankle, you can get damage of this membrane that runs between the two leg bones that you have. It can essentially tear or split a little bit. And so that can give you pain up in the shin. If you look back at the video, James Conner immediately grabs about a third of the way up his shin. And that's where his discomfort was. So when I hear this, that they changed relatively what their diagnosis was after the imaging, that James Conner is already out for this week, my suspicion is that he has some form of a high ankle injury, maybe a little even higher up into the shin, and that this will be a multi-week absence. That is my expectation. How many? You don't know, because an individual takes, you know, varying amount of time to heal. But I would expect that you should make plans beyond week 14, because I imagine it will probably take him several weeks to get back.
Okay, so several weeks could be the time frame. Obviously, you're not dropping James Conner. But, Mike, what we can evaluate without knowing specifically how much time he'll miss is who should play in the backfield, or who you should play amongst the players in the backfield for Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin said, our intention is for this to be a running back by committee job. They promoted Trey Edmonds. They have Stephen Ridley. But the focus right now is on Jalen Samuels. Who is Jalen Samuels, and what is his outlook for week 14?
Yeah, and I know we'll dive more in the ranking section here too, but essentially, you know, he was a guy who was basically an H-back coming into the NFL, not unlike David Johnson, to be quite honest. He played a lot of tight end in college. He actually had more catches than he had carries in four seasons in the FBS. So, you know, I think we'll see a lot of him catching the football. I think that he could see in that 15 range in terms of carries. I don't think he's going to be a 25 carry guy, but again, we didn't expect that from a guy like David Johnson either. So, very intriguing prospect. I think that, again, I think where he's really going to make his hay is as a pass catcher. We've actually already seen him do that so far this season. So he's the number one guy. I'm optimistic about him. I think he should be viewed as a front end RB2 conservatively. Would anybody be surprised if he was a back end RB1 going forward? I don't think so in this offense, how good they've been to running backs, whether it's Le'Veon Bell or Connor or D'Angelo Williams. They've been good to running backs for a long time. So I think there's a lot of room for optimism. He's clearly the top guy. Stephen Ridley, no more than a bench stash. And Trey Edmonds, you know, if you're in like a massive dynasty league and you want to throw him on the end of your bench, sure, why not? But I think it's going to be the Samuel show for now.
Interesting, Mike. So you are sort of dismissing what Mike Tomlin is saying as a running back by committee.
I mean, they haven't done that before, right? When's the last time we saw a committee attack from the Steelers?
When was the last time it didn't involve James Conner or Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah.
D'Angelo Williams.
Right, but D'Angelo Williams probably more accomplished than Jalen Samuels, right?
I that's totally fair, but I you look at Samuels as a guy who they brought in to be specifically a running back. It was never a question. It wasn't right. Like he was drafted like, hey, he could be a tight end, H-back. He was going to be a running back. We saw him carry the ball in the preseason. We've seen him carry the ball a little bit as their clear number two. And he has those passing down chops. So I do, listen, I understand. I think Ridley will be in the mix for some carries. I do think it would not even surprise me if he got to 8 to 10, but I think it'll be 15 to 20, maybe even a little more than 20 touches a game for Samuels, and that's more than enough to put him in the RB1 mix.
You know what? Sometimes I think at this point of the season, when things like this happen, coaches go to committee just because it's less exposure to one dude. Mm-hmm. And from an injury perspective as well. You know, they're not a clear front runner. Obviously, we're getting deep into the bench of running backs for Pittsburgh because they didn't have Le'Veon and James Conner's hurt. But if Jalen Samuels is who they perceive to be their best runner, they don't necessarily want to run him so much that they then risk losing him. So I feel like teams do this. I don't have any hard data for you, but I feel like I've seen this from other teams where if they get one or two that are injured deep, they start spreading it around a little.
All right. We'll talk more about them throughout the week and certainly during the rankings conversation as well. But the Cliff Notes version of what you need to know is this. We prefer most Jalen Samuels until James Conner is back. And don't necessarily count on this being just a one-week absence for James Conner. The mm-hmm. Steelers have this week the Raiders, the following week the Patriots, the following week the Saints. I would think that they might want to have James Conner back as soon as possible. I mean, every team would. But the meat of their schedule in some ways, or one of the big chunks of their schedule, is ahead. What a critical stretch we do have for the Steelers, who are still jockeying for a top two seed in the AFC.
Right. And also, remember, these teams, especially teams who've been to the playoffs, who know how it works, they're looking at a season that extends beyond week 17. We're looking to week 17. They're looking at, like, if we go here, how do we make sure we have the guy for that?
You know what, though? I just said they're jockeying for a top two seed. Heck, they're jockeying for the division right now. They're only a half game up on the Baltimore Ravens. Now, the Ravens still have to play Kansas City, and I want to say one other difficult NFC matchup. They also have, the Chargers in Los Angeles for the Ravens. So they've got a difficult upcoming slate. Home away games at Kansas City and LA, plus home games against the Bucks and the Browns. So a lot at stake there in the NFC North.
And mathematically, the Browns could still make the playoffs, so they have to worry about them too. Don't forget about that.
Worry about the Browns, Mike's beloved Browns. Let's go to the AFC South instead. And Deontay Foreman was officially activated from the roster, from the PUP list to the 53-man roster. Stefania, it's been a long time coming for him, a player who showed some promise down the stretch last year, but at the end of the season tore his Achilles.
Yes, and a terrible injury for anyone, especially for running back. And I think in camp, we were hearing there were mixed things, because at first it sounded like, oh, he was doing pretty well. And then it sounded like, well, he's not making progress as quickly as we thought. And there was this debate about whether he'd go on the PUP list. He ends up doing that. I think that was probably beneficial for him health-wise. Now they got to a point where they had to actually activate him to bring him in or lose that opportunity. So I feel like the move that was just made isn't as much of a signal of like, oh, hey, he's being inserted into lineup as it was, we want to make sure we have him on the active roster. The Texans clearly doing very well. Another team that is looking at the long picture beyond just these 17 weeks. So if you're wondering, is he going to be an immediate threat to Lamar Miller? No. I'm not even sure that he's playing at all right now.
Yeah, you had
but they have him available.
Had to do it by Thursday, as Stefania mentioned. And they cut a player before Tuesday at 4 p.m., which this is getting a little bit sort of into the minutiae, but that also means you're not paying that player for the week. So
right.
If you're just going to cut the guy on Thursday, you cut him on Tuesday and avoid having to pay a check, which I know that sounds cold and harsh, but it's the reality of the NFL. So we'll keep an eye on whether Deontay Foreman plays at all, Mike. Probably a name that moves the needle more in dynasty ranks if he does, in fact, become the starter next year, which is at least possible.
Yeah, no question. I mean, things change quickly in the NFL, as we know. He could come out, maybe he's inactive this week, plays next week, and he looks good, and he starts to steal 5 to 6 touches a game from Alfred Blue and Lamar Miller, and that could be enough to move Miller down to, you know, flex territory. We've seen Blue steal from him already this season and in past season, so I wouldn't be totally shocked. Foreman did look good last season. They took him in the draft for a reason, but I think it's unlikely. I think Miller, at least for the rest of the fantasy regular season or fantasy playoffs, will be the guy.
Greg Olsen was placed on injured reserve this morning. Stefania, no surprise here. We knew that foot injury was going to cost him the rest of the year.
Yes, and he was, as he mentioned, even when he spoke to reporters after this latest injury, he tore the plantar fascia. That doesn't need to be surgically addressed, but he was always going to have this additional procedure on his foot where he refractured. So now he gets it done a little bit sooner, and hopefully he's ready to go when the season starts.
Same thing goes for A.J. Green, by the way, placed on injured reserve for the Bengals. Two formalities that became true. Again, oftentimes you do this on Wednesday before the practice week begins. You can get somebody either onto the active roster and then add a practice squad player, or just get it over with, because let's be honest, it's happening at some point.
Well, and he's another guy who had a surgery, and fairly substantial in his case, because you're basically you know, reinforcing the tissue underneath the ball of the foot where he had that turf toe injury. It's a several month recovery, but the idea of you get it done now and hopefully he's ready when they start up in OTAs.
How about this? Every year around this time, there are a couple of surprise cuts. Sometimes teams move on from veterans. Sometimes teams that are malcontents. Sometimes they move on from veterans who are struggling. But Kelvin Benjamin might be both. Kelvin Benjamin of the Bills was cut yesterday. Now, the Bills have been on a massive youth movement at wide receiver over the past month or so. Benjamin, of course, acquired for a third and seventh round pick from the Panthers on October 31st last year. He was cut yesterday. He's subject to the waiver system, which means that somebody could, in theory, claim him today and add him to their active roster. I don't have a great read on whether that'll happen or not. I think it's possible. I don't think it's by any stretch a guarantee. Mike, I don't really think that we're talking about any Bills wide receiver beyond this, but like maybe for those that are looking ahead to 2019, keep your eye on Zay Jones, who quietly has found some footing of late.
Yeah, no question. I mean, if you're all in on Josh Allen, you're like, he's going to be a good passer the rest of the fantasy playoffs, then maybe you want to pick up Zay Jones right at the 2-touchdown game, but that's unlikely. Obviously, we see, Allen doing most of his work with his legs from a fantasy perspective. But Jones, long-term, yeah, I mean, I still think this could be a guy who's hashtag good at football. We just don't know because he's been kind of limited by the quarterbacks and the offenses in Buffalo the past two seasons. But remember, this guy at ECU, his final season, 158 catches as a senior.
That's the most ever.
Yep. A very intriguing play, very good athlete, high spark score, ran a 4.4. I mean, there's really a lot to like about him. So absolutely a buy low or a stash in Dynasty right now.
Yeah, I think so as well. Here's a player that you mentioned had all the pedigree coming into the NFL. A good reminder of the importance of circumstances, right? Like if he's playing, like if he had played for the Rams, for example, wouldn't it surprise me if he was as productive as some of the guys that they have right now that we're like, we're excited about Josh Reynolds. Put Zay Jones in the Josh Reynolds role, you'd be like, that guy's good.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder, because I put these guys together in rankings, like throughout draft season, you saw them together, are both kind of pigeonholed as potentially slot guys, Zay Jones and Cooper Kupp.
Sure.
What if they swapped roles? What if he went to Buffalo and you never know, Jones could be the guy that's like a fantasy stud.
It feels like Kelvin Benjamin's been angry since he went to Buffalo. Don't you think? I mean, it was weird, and he was kind of banged up in Carolina right before he went to Buffalo, had knee issues, which never seemed like he really fit in there. There was never a good moment for
some
him.
Damning reports about Kelvin Benjamin's sort of agnostic approach to football over the past year, right? Like, seemed like he didn't care.
Like he did, yeah, exactly.
And
like
what's
he
really
just,
interesting.
Yeah. Like because that wasn't the feeling you got in Carolina.
That first year, people might, I mean, it feels like forever ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His rookie season, he was physically dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was basically a tight end playing wide receiver. He was like Jordan Reed's size, probably bigger than Jordan Reed, to be honest with you. 6'5", 245 pounds or so, but not like, he's probably morphed into a different body stature over the past four
seasons.
And
then he tore his ACL and never quite
But his first
came
game back,
back
was Thursday night against the Broncos, and he was awesome.
He looked amazing.
Had two touchdowns.
Didn't sustain.
And he hasn't been the same player since.
Yeah.
So how many touchdowns do we think he'll score in the Super Bowl for New England this year, then?
We're already asking.
Exactly.
That.
So is so true.
But, you know, so he's due less than $2 million, and at this point of the year, most teams kind of have their cap allocations. If you got enough money to spend, I wouldn't be stunned if he got claimed, mm-hmm. but if he does get claims, like, it's going to be one of those proceed with caution because he's a free agent after the year, and there have been some, like I said, some warning signs that, like, does he care enough about his craft to be a productive player? All right, we're going to come back in just a moment and talk about some quarterback rankings. But before we do so, Stefania is going to tell us about 23andMe.
That's right, Field. Now, through December 25th, the 23andMe DNA kits are on sale. 23andMe helps you understand what your DNA can tell you about you and your family story. It's named for the 23 pairs of chromosomes that make up our DNA. A 23andMe DNA kit is the perfect gift for everyone you love. There's never been a better way to give the gift of genetic discovery to your parents, your siblings, your aunts, your grandparents, and everyone else on your list. It's the one gift you can buy the entire family that will be unique for each loved one. 23andMe Health and Ancestry Service includes over 90 personalized genetic reports that offer DNA insights on what makes you unique. It's easy to do. Simply spit into the tube provided in your 23andMe kit, register your sample to your personal 23andMe account, and in a few weeks, receive your personalized online reports. And for wellness, you can learn how your genes play a role in your well-being and lifestyle choices. For example, muscle composition. It's a good thing Matthew's not here while we're talking about muscle composition.
Yep. I'm pretty jacked up. So.
Well, Mike, do you have the genetic muscle composition common in elite power athletes?
I do not.
Well, you might want to test yourself and find out. Studies have found that almost all elite power athletes have a specific genetic variant in a gene related to muscle composition. You might have that version of the gene, too. With 23andMe's muscle composition report, you can explore the link between your DNA and your muscle composition. Now, through December 25th, get 30% off any 23andMe kit. Order your DNA kit at 23andMe.com/FFF. That's the number 23andMe.com/FFF. Again, that's 23andMe.com/FFF.
All right, there you have it there. Always good from Stefania. Let's get now to our rankings, and we begin with Tom Brady. Does not qualify as a starter for any of us this week, but I'm the most optimistic at quarterback 11 against the Miami Dolphins. Mike, you have him there at quarterback 18. There are a lot of information, a lot of stats to support why you are correct. And by the way, Stefania has him at 16, so she's more Mike than I am. You tweeted this, I want to say, last week. Maybe it was maybe even Monday of this week, actually. Something to the effect of, like, Patriots rushing touchdowns from the 1 yard line in this year, like they're like twice as many short touchdowns through the ground as they have through the air. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't think that was me, but I've certainly tweeted on that topic. Essentially that, and we've talked about it in the pod too, essentially they've been super run heavy at the goal line. In fact, they've been more balanced overall. They've been very pass heavy in recent seasons, but this year it's been different. Like they've actually actively tried to run the ball at the goal line. We've seen more rushing touchdowns, and we haven't seen many passing touchdowns from Tom Brady. In fact, over his past five games, field, only four passing touchdowns. That's crazy. That's unheard of. Sometimes he'll put up 15 in five games. So it's been a lot different. Brady, as a result, hasn't posted a top 15 fantasy week since week 7. He's been top 10 in 25% of his starts this season in fantasy points. That is 24th a quarterback. That is a terrible QB1 rate. It just hasn't been good. But, you know, you look back at week 4. I kind of look back at the last time they played Miami, right? They won, and it was a huge score, 38-7.
Yeah, they crushed him, yeah.
He had three touchdowns in the game, but he got picked off twice. He still finished QB16 in a blowout of Miami. That's been the theme for him this season. I mean, the Dolphins have allowed the fourth most fantasy points to quarterbacks over the past 8 weeks, so there is some reason for optimism there. But, I mean, overall, it just has not been there. He has been an atrocious fantasy quarterback this season, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's been certainly a down year for Tom Brady by fantasy football standards. The issue for me was this. Here's where I ended up landing with Tom Brady, is that he is right at the top of the run of quarterbacks with mitigating circumstances. What I mean by that is once you get past, I think this week, it's kind of like Jameis Winston at quarterback 7. Everything from there gets a little bit murkier. Like Matt Ryan, I have Matt Ryan at 8, actually. So for me, it's probably Matt Ryan, though, for whatever reason, a little bit lower ranked in the consensus ranks this week. But like Andrew Luck plays and I like Luck this week, but Luck plays a very good Texans defense. Jared Goff plays an awesome Chicago defense. Mitch Trubisky is banged up right now. Like, Kirk Cousins has been bad, and they play the Seahawks, who have defended the quarterback well this year. Dak is Dak. Like, some weeks great, some weeks not so much. Lamar Jackson has been good as a runner, but he has not thrown the football nearly proficiently enough. So I guess I have Tom Brady at the top of that run of quarterbacks. I always use the term the bottom falls out on running backs or wide receivers at a certain spot each week. I think Tom Brady for me is at the top of where the bottom falls out for quarterbacks, if that makes sense, which is why I have him that high. I guess maybe I'm thinking to myself, like, there's no way you can hold Tom Brady. You can hold him down for 13 weeks, but you can't do it for 14 weeks.
I think that's just it. It's funny that you mentioned that stat, because just to the eyeball test, it feels like it's the running touchdowns for New England this year. It just feels like we haven't seen it. In fact, when Gronkowski comes back after being gone and makes that one catch into the end zone, you're like, now that's what I used to think the Patriots offense really looked like, but it just hasn't been consistent this year.
And by the way, we talked about this Sunday morning on Fantasy Football Now. The first time around through the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Bills, now the three of their final four games are against those teams again. He had no top 15 fantasy weeks. I mean, that was a tough stretch, and Pittsburgh's been good against quarterbacks as well. So
Brady
tough,
typically
tough
is
schedule.
The slow start, is a slow right. finisher, right? He typically has the slowest month in December. Maybe he just reverses the trend this year and gets red hot over the next 4 weeks and wins a bunch of people some championships. By the way, Kyle notes that in goal to go situations this year, the Patriots have 12 rushing touchdowns and 7 passing touchdowns. Let's move along to Andrew Luck, who I just mentioned, who I do like this week, because Andrew Luck, absent last week, has been red hot, right?
And he's here's been the thing. Throwing the ball a ton. Like, I don't feel like that's going to change, right?
How about this? If I told you that a quarterback has at least 8 passing touchdowns and at least 3 touchdowns, whoa. If I told you a quarterback had at least 3 passing touchdowns in 8 of his 9 games, you like that stat, right?
Right.
The problem is Andrew Luck had 0 passing touchdowns. As a matter of fact, the Colts had 0 points last week. All that being said, we're not that far down on Andrew Luck this week. Still close to a top 10 play for us in our consensus ranks, Mike. And it's funny, as mentioned, he's been throwing it so much.
Yeah, no question. I think I'm lowest here, but I still have him 12. So in 12 team leagues, you're still starting him. He's fringe starter. If you have him on your team, you're most likely starting him unless you just have you picked up Jameis Winston or maybe you have one of these other superior options like a Jared Goff, something like that. But here's the thing, and you kind of touched on it. He had the rough game last week. Prior to that, he had been top 10 at quarterback in 8 straight games. And you mentioned 3+ passing touchdowns in all 8 of them games. You look back at the first meeting with the Houston Texans, 40 of 62 for 464 yards and 4 touchdowns. He absolutely lit them up. One of his biggest games of the season. That was kind of one of his breakthrough games, right, in week 4. So he rolled against them. On the other hand, you mentioned tough Houston defense. 4th fewest fantasy points to quarterbacks the past 8 weeks. So there's pluses. There's minuses. I think he settles in as a fringe QB1.
Andrew Luck and the Colts really need this game on Sunday. Really do. If they want to stay in the playoff mix.
I don't know. Houston's not about losing.
Apparently, like, Houston's
been a while.
They are completely immune to losing.
Because you don't think of them. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't sit there and go, "Oh, Houston, this team that never loses." You know, like they don't feel like they're as dominant as they have been in the win column.
Well, I mean, Houston. If you look at their schedule, they might have the clearest path to 13 wins amongst the non-Kansas City teams
division.
In the AFC. Right. So, like, I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but like it wouldn't stun me if Houston goes 13-3 and has a number 2 seed in the playoffs.
Yeah, no question. I mean, we've seen the O-line at least be serviceable. That was the big red flag for me in the offseason. Yeah. They arguably had the worst O-line situation coming into the season. And that's what kind of held you back from getting too excited. Then they start slow and you're like, yep, it adds up. 3 straight losses. The O-line can't protect Deshaun. Deshaun started slow. But since then, I mean, they have the weapons offensively and they have terrific playmakers on defensively. Especially on the edge. I mean, that trio with Clowney, Watt, and Merciless.
That's actually fun to watch because
no question.
There's so much speed on that defense.
Fun team, star power, winning. I like Bill O'Brien. I mean, they're in a good spot.
We're going to come back and after we take this quick break and talk about the men's league and the women's league and then ignore the celebrity.
Yeah, it's definitely time for a break. Too much Texans talk going on, guys.
Colts fan.
All right, and now for a note from our ZipRecruiter's Smartest Fan of the Week.
Hey, this is Chelsea Flores, the ZipRecruiter's Smartest Fan of the Week. And thanks to your mediocre fantasy advice, in my league, I have the most points for, the most points against, and a losing record. Now back to the show.
Amazing.
Is that a bad thing?
That sounds about right, though, doesn't it?
Well... I kind of sort of feel that way myself right now. Let's talk about these leagues, the show leagues, the great show leagues brought to you by ZipRecruiter. The Man's League, Daniel, how about you? Would you like to handle that update there? Where did we land with the Man's League going into the playoffs?
Yeah, we'll finish this one really quickly. There were 4 people that had 9-4 records, 16-team league, basically 2 quarterback league. Pod Yater Joel, Runfield Run, 9 Years Kyle, and Fish Booths Yo-Yo all finished 9-4 to move on to the playoffs.
That name is so good.
Phenomenal. It's phenomenal. But because it's a 16-team league, there are actually 6 teams that make the playoffs. So 2 runners up after that was Worldwide Dan. If you remember, he was our consolation winner. He finished 8-5 and squeaking into the very last place, the number 6 seed of the Man's League, after starting 1-5 and rattling off 7 straight wins, it is me, Secret Squirrel.
Boo.
Daniel!
Making the playoffs.
Good job, buddy. That's awesome.
Daniel's just having quite the year in fantasy football.
I don't even know what to say about it. I mean, I'm like way up in one side and way down in the other side.
Which is really kind of amazing. Maybe it's just to balance out because your Lions are having such an awful year.
Maybe that's what it is.
The fantasy football gods are like, we need to throw him a bone.
I remember sitting here in this very chair saying to Kyle.
Funny that's not happening to me, though.
No,
as a 49ers fan.
I remember sitting here in this chair, 1-5, saying to Kyle, I need to win out in order to make the playoffs. And I went on to barely win. This last week, I won by 1.4 points because Alshon Jeffrey did not come through on Monday Night Football for I was playing against.
Wow. Well, let's hope stat corrections don't doom you overnight tonight. Stat corrections will run as they do every single Wednesday night into Thursday.
So we'll see. Although I do want to say really quickly, my starting running backs were Alex Collins and James Conner. So now I am rolling with Jalen Samuels and Duke Johnson as my playoff starting running backs.
I wish you the very best.
Thank you. I'm going to need it.
Stefania, tell us about the women's league.
Well, the women's league, here, the thing, most importantly, I'm in the playoffs.
Yeah!
Which it didn't look like that was going to happen at the start of the year, but I managed to gain some ground at the end, including my last victory against 49er Christina, which, by the way, not easy to do because she's in outright first place in that other division. So we have two divisions, and one aptly named the 49ers mine, and then the Seahawks, which is the division that Mina Kimes plays in. Mm. Mina Kimes, as of right now, not in the playoffs.
Ooh, shade.
So sorry, Mina, but, you know, whatever, you're a Seahawks fan. Anyway, more importantly, Lawyer Alex, with a 10-3 record, gets a bye week, as well as 49er Christina, who, I just love the fact that she had to wear a 49ers hat in her avatar for the whole season, a 49ers cap, and that's how it was part of how she got into the league. And we met at the New York live show, so good for you. Proud of you for getting in the league in first place. Now, that division was so tough that her record was 7-6. Second place in that division tied between Mina and tour guide Tasha at 6-7, and then three teams at 5-8. So obviously a really competitive division.
Yeah, very competitive.
But for our side, there was more of a range. Lawyer Alex at 10-3, CSI Christie at 10-3. I mean, that's brutal. I was 8-5, so I was mediocre. You expect nothing less because I represent the podcast that way. Super smart Rachel behind me at 7-6, fiance to be named later at 6-7, and poor Boston Show Jen just had a lot of bad luck with her team and ended up 3-10. So the playoffs right now, as it stands, Lawyer Alex and 49er Christina get a bye. I'm coming into the third seed is CSI Christie with that 10-3 record. You get the third seed. Mm. Fourth seed is me at 8-5. Fifth is Super Smart Rachel at 7-6. And sixth is Tour Guide Tasha at 6-7.
All right. Good stuff there. Now for our Celebrity League update. Of course, we had 14.
Well, the celebrities are actually in the playoffs. Well,
it's, and then not the duds.
The fantasy staff.
I feel crushed. I don't have the opportunity to defend my title this year, but Zac Efron, who came in second place last year.
He's got nothing else going on in life. It's too bad that nothing ever works out for him. Seriously. He destroyed me on his last week before the playoffs. It's just like, I'm like, does he even realize? Is he even, like, he's busy somewhere in Europe at some premiere or something. And he's
carried a 5-game winning streak into the postseason. He will have the one seed and a bye. The team of Lord and Miller, Evan Longoria, Anthony Mackie, Sim Sarn and Anna Faris, John Legend, and Jim Parsons also make the playoffs. Those teams in that order.
Awesome.
I'm the odd man out looking in. So hopefully next year we'll come back stronger. You know that I'm keeping it short and sweeter because it's super embarrassing that we didn't make the playoffs, but it's all good.
This part of fantasy football.
Well, like, it's all just part of the experience. Yeah. Things can undo you very quickly.
And Jim Parsons, I'm really happy for him for two reasons. One, my mom loves him. So she is like all she cares. I sent him a note. I was like, you know, my mom is happier that you made the playoffs than me. Number two, he has had some bad luck in a couple of years. Like, things broke his way this time, and so I'm happy for him that he made the playoffs.
So good luck to all of them. We'll continue to update that later on in the season as we get more results. But for now, the person in pole position is Zac Efron. Let's begin with some of our running back rank conversations. And Joe Mixon is a player that Stefania and I have an agreement on. We have him at 11th right now. But Mike is much more pessimistic. That's right. Mike, you have an issue with, is it something with the matchup with Joe Mixon? Are you less confident because of what you saw from Jeff Driscoll in the offense last week? Why so low at 23?
I'm at 23. Well, let's start with the good. Let's start with the good on Joe Mixon because I want to give him credit. Last season, the efficiency was very poor, right? We were really concerned about his per rush efficiency. He's been better this year, 4.9 yards per carry, a little bit above average after contact too. So that's good. The problem is his playing time is going the wrong direction. He only edged Gio Bernard in snaps 36-27 on Sunday. He had a huge gap prior to that. In fact, Bernard out-targeted him 8-2. So what happens if they fall behind in LA this week with Jeff Driscoll at quarterback? Is it going to be the Bernard show again and he's stuck standing on the bench? That's what it looked like last week. So that's a concern. And not to mention that with Driscoll there, are they going to score touchdowns? I mean, they had one last week. The week before, he scored a few against the Browns, but his efficiency as a passer has not been good. I have serious concerns about the this offense and their ability to score touchdowns and move the ball downfield. So a lot of red flags here for me. I think he's more of a back-end RB2 this week.
Probably fair. I think I just looked to the workload that Joe Mixon's probably going to see, as he will every single week in that Cincinnati offense. The Chargers allowed 5 running back rushing touchdowns over the past 3 seasons. Noted. So that's a good sign right there. They have been a little bit more vulnerable against the run of late, but I hear you, Mike. It was a difficult watch for the Bengals on Sunday. There were a lot of really difficult offenses to watch this past weekend. The Redskins, the Bengals, the Cardinals are always difficult to watch. The mm-hmm. Packers are exceedingly difficult to watch right now. The Vikings were tough to watch, and they scored just 10 points.
Yeah, Jets, you know, Miami, there's
Jets,
so many.
Jets, Miami,
yeah.
There. Buffalo was actually fun because Josh Allen's fun. But besides that, there have been a lot of difficult offenses to watch this season.
I want to take a quick break before we get into the next running back. Not a break, but just to make sure that we update on a bet we had last week.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Daniel, why don't we not do that?
We had, speaking of the AFC North,
we had a Stance Sox bet. Yes. Gus Edwards. Mike Clay and Kyle Soppy had one side.
Oh.
Gus
yeah.
Edwards being
oh,
a
you
top
were so excited.
Because I thought it was over. Tariq Cohen. I thought that was where we, I was so excited because I destroyed you.
Oh,
and
the
Tariq
emotional
Cohen.
Change right there. She
I
was
know.
Ready to
yeah.
celebrate and
well,
throw
and
it
I
in
wanted
my
some
face
cool
and then
socks.
To
win yourself
I wanted
these
some cool
nice
socks.
Pair of Stance socks. Check those suckers out.
Wow,
beautiful.
Those look good right there. Wow. Look at those.
That's very
babies.
Upsetting. Are you sure we can't have that bet be about Tariq Cohen?
I am pretty sure. I'm pretty sure. So it was running back 26 or higher. Field and Stefania took 26 or higher. Mike and Kyle took lower. He ended up as a running back 43. So it was close.
It was and he
close.
Still ran it well. Yeah. He said, what, 80 rushing yards? I mean, that was the issue. No volume in the passing game.
For the record, how smart you are, Mike.
If you listen to the Monday show, I gave you quite a bit of credit when we talked about the fact that you said he's going to get a ton of work. He just doesn't have any passing game value. So
Bill Belichick said it yesterday. Trust the process.
In your email, our codes for Stance Sox. Congratulations to you two as the winners.
Thank you.
Bill and Stefania, do better next time.
Can we have a retro bet on Tariq Cohen? Because
did I not like him? Was I low on him? I don't know.
Wow. So I have a good memory here for Mike
Clay. Pull the tape.
We talked about Edwards. We talked about
you thought you
Lindsay.
Were you thought I was crazy high on Tariq Cohen, and I had him ranked 11th or 14th, whatever.
Okay.
He came in number one.
Well done. Just, yeah. Good call.
Yeah, but I got no socks.
I'll give you one of my 2 socks.
It was a it was an impressive week for Tariq Cohen. That was probably Stefania's best call of
my best
week.
This
moving
season,
forward to week 14, Jalen Samuels, and we talked about him earlier on in the show, is the presumptive new starting running back in Pittsburgh. Mike has him at 13. I've got him at 23.
I know I'm at 17.
You're at 17, Stefania. So I need to be talked into whether or not it's a sure thing that Jalen Samuels be the starter and the workhorse. Mike is already at that point. So my ranking is not reflective of what I think he would do if he got 15 or 20 carries. Or total touches. My
it's
ranking
reflective.
Is reflective
Mike
of the
Tomlin
idea that,
saying
like,
running back by committee.
I'm taking him at his word. So, Mike, you are convinced now that he is going to have the opportunity to handle a heavy load.
Yeah, I think so. And I think even if he only gets 8 to 12 carries, he can make up for it with 8 targets. And I would not be surprised at all if that was the case. In fact, you look at his usage this season, 54 receiving yards and 9 targets, 31 rushing yards and 12 attempts. So the rushing efficiency hasn't been there. And granted, we're talking about a very small sample, but they have tried to get him the ball in the passing game when he's been on the field. So very much like a guy like Tariq Cohen. Again, you don't need a lot of running game volume to have a great fantasy day if you're a playmaker as a pass catcher. So I like him. I just think the floor is high, especially in this high-scoring Steelers offense. Not to mention, they're playing the Raiders. 4 of the past 6 running back units to face the Raiders have finished top 7 in fantasy points. So also a good matchup, though. I'm surprised the spread for this is like 11.
I think it's 10.5, yeah.
I mean, the Raiders just played with Kansas City at home, and then now the Steelers are traveling all the way out there and coming off a loss, and they're like double-digit favorites. That's a trap, I think.
We know who Mike's taking in picks.
No question.
Yeah.
No question.
Jalen Samuels, by the way, a note here from Kyle. The Raiders are allowing a league-low 3.3 running back receptions per game this season, which sometimes those stats can just be a little bit random, but I think when you are so bad, as the Raiders often are, defensively, teams are rarely having to throw to catch up against Oakland. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, when you can't cover by anybody down the field and you can't generate pressure against the quarterback, there's really no need for as many dump-offs. I'm not saying there won't be for Jalen Samuels mm-hmm. this week, but it's funny how sometimes those stats can really just sort of be nothing more than, I don't say fluke, but coincidence is the right word, or goofy.
Yeah,
in this
no question.
Like, that's, there's something to it.
Like I tweeted last night, I think it's Arizona has yet to allow a quarterback week better than 10th this season.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy.
Because no one has to throw
yeah,
on
Yeah, because no one has it. They're like done after first quarter. Yeah.
So Jalen Samuels, a player that we'll talk about more throughout the week as we get more information from the Steelers. The answer may be, by the way, Daniel, what do you got?
Well, I just had a question on this. Understanding, I want to leave all the other stuff out of it. But let's say you listen to this podcast, but you do play in a Yahoo league where whatever it is, he is a tight end. What he would be tight end
three.
Yeah.
Ertz, Kelsey, Samuels. Yeah. If you agreed. If he's on your roster, he's starting at tight end for you this week. Unless you have one of those two guys and use him at running back or flex.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And listen, we don't have to get into whether he should or shouldn't be a tight end in our leagues. He obviously should not be based off of his usage and how he was drafted, et cetera. But and Yahoo made a decision and that's fine. And I respect the fact that they stuck with it. You can't pull the plug on adding somebody as Jalen Samuels as a tight end, like you can't do that. So I respect the way that they've gone about their process. And like if you play in Yahoo and you've got him in a tight end, you are in great fortune right now.
Yeah,
like you hit the jackpot.
And no question, you understand why they're not changing it now. But this is why, you know, Keith and you and I talk about this stuff a lot. We get a lot of tweets and a lot of emails and commentary about adding designations prematurely. This is why we're very selective about that. You don't want to fall into these kind of traps. All right.
Bless him.
Wow.
Excuse me. Yeah. Although Keith did text me earlier today that he's thinking about adding Odell as quarterback. So
yeah. Well, it's understandable.
We need to get Big Ben punter designation too.
True. Keith, any retort?
Just consider it done. I mean, I'm all about making people happy.
Consider it done. There you have it. For those of you that don't know, the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by ZipRecruiter. Picking a kicker in the second round? Not that smart. You know what else isn't smart? Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes, using ZipRecruiter to help you find qualified candidates for your business. Now that's smart. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and then actively invites them to apply. So you get qualified candidates fast. Like 4-3-40 fast. No wonder ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., and that's based on hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. So visit ZipRecruiter.com/06010 today. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. How about that? At ZipRecruiter.com/06010. That's ZipRecruiter.com/06010. Moving along here into the pass catcher rankings, and we begin with Golden Tate. Mike, you must hate the Eagles because you have him at 32. Stefania and I have him at 22 and 24, coming off of his best game, but he might face the stingiest defense to opposing wide receivers in the NFL right now.
Yeah, you know how they say, like, keep your expectations low so you can't get hurt, right? I'm keeping the bar low.
You are letting emotion work its way into your rankings.
I'm worried that they'll go in, upset the Cowboys, and then lose to Houston.
You really are taking on the Matthew role. I mean, that is so Matthew. It's like, I'm going to throw it the other way so that I'm not disappointed.
Yeah, it's been right. No, in all seriousness, the Tate ranking is objective. I promise. It always is. Dallas has allowed the third fewest fantasy points to receivers over the past 8 weeks. They've been terrific defensively. We've seen that. We saw them shut down the Saints. It is a tough match. We saw them have success against the Eagles just a few weeks ago. Tate does have 7+ targets in 3 games. You like that. But here's what jumps out to me. He only ran 23 pass routes on Monday Night Football against the Redskins. Nelson Aguilar ran 37. Alshon Jeffrey, 39. I mean, he is clearly their number three wide receiver right now. And that should certainly be a red flag. Yes, he was the number 5 scoring wide receiver against the Redskins in fantasy last week, but that was his first top 35 since week 4. It's been a long time since he's had a good fantasy week. And I know he had the trade and, you know, was learning the Eagles offense, but, you know, it's not like he was killing it with Detroit either.
But what about just to the eyeball test? Because Carson Wentz looked to me like he finally got in a rhythm throwing, which is something I haven't really, I mean, to some degree he did. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey might not say so, but I felt like we saw some stuff out of Carson Wentz that I hadn't really seen before. And maybe there's some chemistry with Golden Tate. I mean, that honestly, that inspired me because Golden Tate has been like absent and they talked about how hard it's been to work him into the offense. And now it actually looked like there was a rapport there.
I think that's enough to make him a fringe wide receiver 3. I'm just you're 10 spots higher than me. So you're just a little more optimistic.
I'm not fringe.
Here's part of the reason why you're a little less afraid of the Cowboys matchup. Golden Tate plays in the slot, as we all know. And the most difficult area for a defense to lock down a wide receiver's slot. There's a lot of traffic there. A lot of teams don't even bother putting their best cornerbacks into the slot. There's a lot of ways to create natural separation. You're in the middle of the field.
And Golden Tate's better at it than Golden most. Tate.
So,
he thrives then.
Matchup is a little less scary to me, but I understand some of the concerns here, Mike. Again, I don't want to rely on the same argument every single time, but Golden Tate is like right there on that Mendoza line of wide receivers where you go from like confident to like, all right, I am just picking through a lot of players that are pretty much the same. You got to find little nitpicking arguments to rank one ahead of the other.
Yeah, no doubt. And really quick, Anthony Brown, the slot corner for Dallas. The Cowboys have allowed the third fewest fantasy points to the slot this season, but a little worse lately. They've been struggling over the past month or so. So could take advantage of that.
Fun fact, and you probably already know this if you're listening to this podcast, Anthony Brown literally has a chip on his shoulder. He got a tattoo of a chip, a potato chip on his shoulder.
Are you serious?
Not a joke.
Did not know that. That's
Anthony
that's
Brown,
a good fun
literally.
Fact.
Wow.
I think it was a 6-round pick.
You think he'll regret that when he's like 60?
I think he might regret it.
No, Stefania, you never regret tattoos, ever.
I mean, it's a chip.
But Daniel, if you're going to have one chip on your shoulder, what would be your preferred chip? Like, what's your favorite chip in the whole world?
It would probably have to be nacho cheese Doritos. They're just like a classic.
Good call.
You know what I mean?
Nacho cheese Doritos. Okay.
Yeah.
Stefania?
Anything that's like the salt and vinegar, you know, like the kettle chips with the sea salt and vinegar. Although I have to say, you know, John Legend, who plays in our Celeb League, I'm a huge fan of his wife, Chrissy Teigen, and she did a whole.
I think a number of our listeners are also.
She did
a huge
this
fan
whole
of
chip tasting video thing that is hilarious, where she was trying to guess the flavor, and a couple of them, they were horrible. Like it was what was on it, what they will turn a chip into is. You don't want to know.
I do not.
You got to be careful.
It's funny. You should go watch a video because she's hilarious. She's hilarious. Anything she does, but this like tasting the chips and trying to guess it. Of course, she got the one that was like the Thai flavored chips. She totally nailed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No. Ooh, good pick up by her.
I'll go Doritos. What do you got?
Kettle brand Buffalo Blue from Kettle Chips.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, wow. We never tried that one.
On the hallway in ESPN. Yep. They've got like Moscow Mule chips. They got some definitely eccentric flavors.
Oh, well, hey,
try those.
But every once in a while, you just run through the hallway and you're like, yeah, whatever. I'll go scan.
They have like some margarita. There's some Cabernet chips in there.
Cabernet chips. Jarvis Landry for the Browns had his best game in quite some time this past weekend. 6 for 103 on 10 targets. They now play the Carolina Panthers who, they have really struggled over the past 4 weeks, losing every single one of those games. They got him at 18. Mike, you've got him at 25. I don't think this is about us being so divisive. I think the question is probably this. I think I said 10 targets, probably 9 targets for Jarvis Landry. Is this more, like, do we think that, has the market corrected itself, so to speak, with Jarvis Landry? Is he back on track?
I don't know. I have some concerns, and that's coming from someone who considers himself to be a Jarvis Landry apologist. Yeah. I spent a lot of time researching him in the offseason, and I blamed a lot of his lack of efficiency on the offense in Miami. It was just the way that he was utilized didn't allow him to produce much, but he hasn't been able to produce downfield more this season. He has certainly had problems in this offense, and it's been volume related as of late. He's wide receiver 23 on the season in fantasy with only one top 10 week. He's averaging 6.2 yards per target, which is actually up after last week. That is still worst among all receivers with 90 plus targets this season. Now let's look at the matchup. They play the Panthers this week. They've allowed the 8th most fantasy points to receivers over the past 2 months. However, most of that has come on the perimeter. They've really struggled with Dante Jackson and James Bradbury on the outside. They've been average against the slot. So I think Cleveland will come out and try to attack Rashard Higgins and Antonio Callaway on the outside. It's pretty ordinary matchup for Landry. So for me, settles in as a fringe two.
Yeah, I kind of look at some of the teams they played during that 4-game losing streak. The Steelers, better in the perimeter than they are. Well, I mean, they have
Juju
good
inside.
Players everywhere, yeah. But Juju can do anything from any spot. I don't remember how he did against the Steelers in that particular, or how he did against the Panthers in that week. But the Lions, you know, Lions obviously post Golden Tate have a much different look. The Seahawks, Tyler Lockett, who is the sort of like, you know, the Jekyll and Hyde player, right? In that game, he had 5 for 107 and a touchdown. Although I don't think Lockett's exclusively a slot player in this past week against the Bucs.
No.
Lockett's 50, roughly 50-50.
This past week against the Bucs, I mean, Adam Humphrey 7 for 61 in the touchdown. So kind of like that. So I've got him at 18. You've got him at 25. Stefania has him at 20. We're all sort of in that same neighborhood there for Jarvis Landry. Cortland Sutton, tough one here. Another one where it's like, how much do you react to one good game from Cortland Sutton? Because he was awesome. 4 for 85 and a touchdown last week. I've got him at 43 this week. Mike at 38. Stefania, you're the most bullish 35. Perhaps you're trying to reverse jinx him with facing your 49ers.
And you wanted to talk about him. This is your guy.
Who?
Yeah, this was your suggestion. You wanted to talk Courtland Sutton.
Well, only because I wanted to hear what you had to say about him facing the 49ers. I was curious why you had him so low, and unless it's that you think the 49ers are going to be so down and so behind that they're just going to let Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman run the ball essentially and not have to throw deep. But I feel like this is an opportunity. They found something. They found some success with Courtland Sutton last week. He hadn't been targeted as much. And I feel like, look, he's got, to me, he's got an equal opportunity to score as Emmanuel Sanders. It's sort of a toss up there. But the secondary in the 49ers is completely depleted. I mean, completely gone. So to me, it's a wide receivers can feast on the 49ers.
Yeah, they sure can. And those points are well taken. My concerns with Sutton were merely like he's been super inefficient this year, catching less than 50% of his targets. And he's only had 7 targets or more in a game once. And that was last week. So it could be that they say, like, we need to get this guy prominently involved. I guess I'm just wondering if, you know, the 3 for 57 days are more likely than the, you know, 18 points.
I just think the possibility for a big play is wide open against the 49ers. And I've seen it happen enough this year that I think that even if his targets are relatively few, he's got a chance for a big play easily.
And to speak to that, about half his routes will come against Akella Witherspoon, who you just mentioned. You know, they've had problems. Now, Richard Sherman's been terrific. He's been, no question, he stays at home on the other side. He's been good. He'll see some of him, but Witherspoon
has
been a disappointment.
I think we all thought
he would take a leap forward. Yeah, we thought he'd take a leap forward. He has struggled. So he'll see a lot of him. Speaking to big plays, he's averaging 19.9 yards per reception this season. Is Sutton that is highest in the NFL among receivers with 40 plus targets.
Wonder if it'll go up after this week.
Yeah, very well could.
29.9 yards per catch after a performance.
Poor Niners. Yeah, no Matt Breida this week.
Yep. By the way,
he's just awful.
One more quick note: he was wide receiver 12 last week. That was his best fantasy week of his career by far. His previous best was 34th. So. We'll see. I got to see it more before I get too high on him.
Yeah,
I don't think we're out of the.
Mm-hmm. I don't think our rankings are unreasonable.
No, I'm three below you.
Yeah. It'd be really interesting to see what this Broncos team looks like. They got the foundation in place. Like this could be a leap team next year. I know they could win 10 games. Yeah. But I'm saying like they could be a leap team going into 2019. Time now for one of our favorite segments. Back that up.
He's a brainiac. He's my clay.
We got the backup noise this week.
We got the backup noise last week, Stefania.
No, I didn't hear it. I don't think that's correct. Didn't we miss it? Or was that 2 weeks ago?
I did it with my mouth.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I thought it was
That's
pretty
why
good
I
too.
Tried to forget it because it was painful.
I'm hard on you, Daniel. I thought you nailed it.
You know,
I appreciate that.
Keith
thank
has
you.
That thing where he hears sounds and it really hurts his ears.
Is that what that is?
That's your fault.
You are feisty. I'll tell you what, man. Welcome to the gun show today.
That's right. Good thing you're sitting way back.
That's right.
In the way back.
Every year, Keith compiles a list of the players that are on the highest percentage of, I believe, championship winning rosters. Usually it's done right around week 17 because many championships are, are decided in week 17.
It's got to be this guy.
I would imagine it's often a player who exceeds expectations based off where he was taken. Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Chiefs is my bet to be on the highest percentage of championship winning teams this year. Mike, I've had him at quarterback 2 this week, and I felt dirty not putting him at quarterback 1.
I know.
22.6 fantasy points is his projection. It's a great Ravens defense. You confident in Patrick Mahomes this week?
Hot take, right?
Yeah,
hashtag
how dare you
bold
be, right?
Take, hot take, whatever you want. Yeah, I like Pat Mahomes. He's still my number one quarterback this week. He is a number one fantasy quarterback by 65 points over QB2. He is crushing it. 7 top 5 fantasy weeks this season, including 5 of his past 6. If there's something that could change, it could be fewer passing touchdowns. Almost 80% of their touchdowns have been passes. You look at the history of Andy Reid and the play calling this season, it suggests it should be closer to 70%. Whatever. He can afford a few fewer touchdowns away. He is playing this season. Again, still might QB1 despite facing the Ravens defense this week. They haven't allowed more than 2 passing touchdowns since week 2 and have allowed 4 top 10 fantasy weeks, however, including 3 over the past 5. So they have come back to earth a little bit defensively against quarterbacks. He's outstanding. He has the weapons. Could have Sammy Watkins back. We'll see. Really a lot to like here.
Yeah, I feel like the Ravens defense is mitigated a little bit by playing an Arrowhead. That's always, that factor is, it's hard to know unless you've been there. It's hard to appreciate how much I think that changes the way a team plays. And also for me, the only reason I moved him to number two is because of the, what Drew Brees is, the opportunity for Drew Brees. And I think that it's going to be throw, throw, throw. And also that I do think they're going to end up going to the run a bit in this game against the Ravens.
The only thing that scares me about Drew Brees, and this scared me like 5 minutes before we went on the air today, was I was speaking to someone who works here at ESPN who's a loyal Saints fan. He mentioned it's supposed to be really wet in Tampa on Sunday, but I'm looking at the forecast right now. Doesn't look as ominous at the moment, but something to keep in mind. We'll discuss that, of course, on Fantasy Football. Now, David Johnson for the Cardinals, Mike. He got vultured twice last week. You still confident in DJ against the Lions?
Yeah, I am, despite his slump as of late. I mean, if you're worried about Chase Edmonds, don't be right now. He had 5 carries and 2 targets on only 11 snaps in that game. That's been about what he's done this season in terms of his usage. David Johnson played 48 snaps, had 20 carries, 2 targets in that game. Usually his targets are higher. That would be the only red flag. But again, he played 82% of the snaps in that game. That was actually his highest, believe it or not, since week 6 on the season, playing over 80% of the snaps. He's handled 78% of the carries, run 55% of their possible pass routes, 15% of the targets. I mean, he has been a workhorse, as we kind of expected this season, a top 20 fantasy running back in 7 of 12 games. Yes, that's fallen off as of late, only 2 of his past 6. But again, it's hard really to ignore the workload, not to mention it's hard to ignore their schedule the rest of the season. It is very light going forward, including this week against Detroit. The worst weekly fantasy finish by an opposing running back unit is RB20. And, you know, maybe it's a, you know, it provides a high floor for David Johnson. The fact that they haven't allowed, you know, they haven't had any running back units go against him and just be atrocious. They've all been at least, you know, kind of mid-range at worst. So, you know, back-to-back top 8 weeks allowed as well to running back. So a lot to like, even against your Detroit Lions, Daniel.
I don't think so, Mike Clay, and I'm going to go double or nothing with you. What do you think? You want to go double or nothing, Stan Sox bet here on this David Johnson projection?
Double or nothing
what? You'll get 2 pairs of socks.
Okay.
Or get no pairs of socks.
My socks.
Well, then you better get it right.
This is a new bet.
You've got him at 19.4 points. What do we say? I'm going to take the under on that for sure. I'll tell you what, I'm feeling so confident, I'll just take an even 18 straight points. 18 points or under, I get both of your pairs of socks.
Done.
You get over 18 points, you get a second pair of Stan socks.
All right, done. Let's
wow.
Do it.
Deal?
I'm going, I'll go with Stefani's boy, David Johnson. I got him.
All right.
You're so confident, Daniel.
Yeah. Have you seen the Lions run defense when they don't play Todd Gurley?
Yeah.
That's really good.
It's still bad.
Few others here. Dalvin Cook for this against the Seahawks. Mike, he has been pretty good of late for the Vikings. Hasn't been the most efficient, but he's getting really involved in the passing game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like Dalvin Cook coming into the season for sure. Probably was higher on him than most, and it hasn't worked out. So I'll take the L on that one. It just, injuries aside, the production hasn't been good enough either. You know, you look back at his return from injury. He's been back for 4 games. He's finished 17th or better at the position in fantasy points during 3 of those games, but has no weekly finishes better than 10th this season. So he has not shown a very high fantasy ceiling. You look at the matchup against Seattle, 7th most fantasy points allowed to running backs the past 8 weeks. 3 straight opposing running backs units have finished top 8. So that's good. That is the plus for Dalvin Cook. My major issue here with Dalvin Cook is a lack of a rushing role. He has carried the ball exactly 9 or 10 times during each of his past 6 games. That is not good enough. 9 or 10 carries.
Crazy.
From a guy who's a fringe RB1 or a solid RB1, we would hope, that's not going to cut it. So he did have a big boost in targets this past week, but that has not been the case throughout the season. You know, I just can't get past 9 or 10 carries in 6 consecutive games. Not enough.
Been kind of a curious season so far for Dalvin Cook in a big game on Monday night. Mike Evans for the Bucs against the Saints, 16.4 points might actually sound a little bit low to some people, Mike.
Yeah, I guess so, but he's trending the wrong way. He's finished 45th or worse at wide receiver 3 of his past 5 games. It's not, again, that's not good. That low floor is crushing. Marshawn Lattimore, shadow looms here very well, could be all over him. Now, I will say this, that he was on him all the way back in week 1. And it didn't slow him down too much. Mike Evans was pretty good, as were all of the wide receivers. The Tampa Bay wide receivers in that game, 361 yards, 4 touchdowns on just 18 catches in that game. Evans himself caught all 7 of his targets, 147 yards and 1 touchdown. Chris Godwin had a huge game.
A different quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Fitzmagic, baby.
Yeah.
No question. But they seem to have... I mean, Winston's been awesome too this season.
I know, but I feel like he hasn't been awesome with Evans. That was my point.
Yeah, he was early on, but you're right.
I
mean, obviously,
I feel
he's fallen off.
Something's happened. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on between them, but he seems to like Adam Humphries and Chris Godwin more.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, part
that
of these,
is my hashtag analysis. But I feel like as somebody who has Mike Evans in a league, I've been actually paying attention to that.
No, I get you. I'm a little bit lower than usual. I have him outside my top 12 receivers. So I do totally get that. I have his target share down a little bit from where it was earlier this season and with Ryan Fitzpatrick. So there's certainly something there. But again, at any given point, they can explode against the Saints defense. We've seen it time and time again, especially with them ahead. They need to throw, or opposing offenses need to throw a lot. The Saints have allowed the most fantasy points to receivers over the past 2 months and for the season. But they've been a little bit better field over the past month. Three of the past four were 19th or worse against them. So trending the right way, but you know, this Bucs offense has been terrific this season.
One more time, Mike. Rob Gronkowski, 11.5 points is his projection. That's no Jalen Samuels effort at tight end, but tell us why you believe Gronk could at least get double-digit points.
Yeah.
That's how far we've come.
I think he can get there, but there's some reason for concern, obviously, and for similar reasons to Tom Brady. The passing touchdowns have not been there. The usage near the goal line has not been there. Only three top 10 fantasy weeks for Gronk this season at 33% hit rate, ranks only 12th at the position. So he's been giving you kind of fringe tight end one numbers this season. If there is a positive, he's played since two games back from injury. He's played 99% of the snaps, run 82% of the possible pass routes. You like that. But again, the Patriots very heavy, run heavy at the goal line. He only has five end zone targets this season. That ranks 49th in the NFL. I mean, even if you account a little bit for the games he missed, still 49th in end zone targets for Gronk. That is crushing. By the way, the Dolphins have allowed double-digit fantasy points to tight ends in six straight games before last week's kind of debacle. So I know that's like your, whenever I say something like that, I'm like, Field hates those stats, tight end fantasy points against, but they've been exposed by them
every once in a while. But let's just say this. You're telling me there's a chance. All right, one Twitter question from Keith. What do you got here, Keith?
Yeah, Eric wants to know, which back do you have more confidence in for the next couple of weeks, Jeff Wilson Jr. or Jalen Samuels, half PPR league?
I think probably Jalen Samuels, based off what we said about the possibility that James Conner, Jeff Wilson or Jalen Samuels.
Jeff Wilson.
Only because it sounds like James Conner might be a multi-week thing, whereas we don't know for sure on Matt Breida.
I exactly agree with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, that we don't know. I think Matt Breida could be a multi-week thing too, but for the rest of the season, fantasy season, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, I have to lean Samuels for the reason you just laid out. Yeah. We just don't know on who's going to return first.
Comparable value for this week is what I would say. You obviously lean towards Samuels because he plays in a better offense, more likely to score a touchdown, but comparable value for week 14.
Yeah.
Speaking of comparable value, the same three of us are coming back tomorrow to preview Thursday night football. We've got a game. It's the Jaguars and the Titans. Can't say it's a massive game, but I'm looking forward to watching Jacksonville, see if they have that edge back, and I am a Titans apologist.
Marcus Mariota practicing. Yep. People worried about his hand. That's practicing.
Good news there as well. A game that at least keeps Tennessee potentially in the AFC playoff mix. Stefania is StefaniaB87 on Instagram. All the great stuff there. And Stefania_ESPN on Twitter, where you can find basically and everything you need to know about what's going on with Markelle Fultz, which a lot of questions in the basketball world about the former number one overall pick. Mike Clay NFL on Twitter and Instagram. Mike Clay has his usual allotment of content, the Fantasy 32. He's got wide receiver, cornerback matchups, so much information. He's got projections. He's even got some stats I don't understand. Things like if every team with a better record wins every game going forward, this is how they'll line up in the draft in 2027. Stuff like that's way above my Wesleyan level brain.
I can tell you how the Browns can make the playoffs, all
there
that
you
stuff.
Go. I'm at Field Yates, and mostly I just post videos and funny things, hopefully to entertain you. We're back on Thursday.
You're in the 06010. Never gonna hustle, in case you didn't know. Matthew Berry, TMR.
You guys go ahead, give me grief for being on SportsCenter for 45 seconds.
I think you could do better than me, because I don't think you could.
Jailbait, Field Yates.
You're terrible at hashtag improv.
At Field Yates. At Field Yates.
Stefania Bell.
Oh, don't let Barry convert you.
Secret Squirrel Daniel Dow.
Make
happen. Mediocre.